It is time for our monthly media segment, Signals and Noise. One thing you notice about running a monthly media segment at this time in history is that the topics come fast and furious. We can try to lock up the topics a few days in advance, but the avalanche of news frequently buries us right up to the last minute. That's okay. That means there's always plenty to talk about. And we do define media very broadly, taking in items about the media themselves and content delivered over a broad range of media, from virtual reality to books. We have with us Andrew Gay from the communications faculty at Southern Oregon University. Good to have you back, Andrew.
Thanks for having me.
And substituting once again for Precious Yamaguchi, Chris Lucas, also from the communication faculty. Chris, good to have you back here.
Thanks, Jeffrey.
So why don't we start? It's gotten to the point now, I really just look at Andrew and say, okay, what happened after 6 o'clock this morning that I need to catch up with? So why don't we start with the newest thing?
Yeah, well, we were talking about, a late breaking story. Yesterday afternoon, the New York Times broke a big story on the musical artist Ryan Adams, not Brian Adams, right, Ryan Adams, okay. Kind of an alt country, alternative rock superstar of the hipster set of folks who like to say they knew Ryan Adams before he was cool. He was married to Mandy Moore for a while, but the story was that 12 women have come forward, including Mandy Moore, that he had used his kind of power as a tastemaker. He has his own sub-label on a record label, and had reached out to young artists, female artists, and promised them career success if essentially in exchange for sexual favors, or once they would spurn his advances, they would be punished. That he would sabotage their career, withdraw promises, take them off tours, things like that. And that was very manipulative. And he's married Mandy Moore for a while. She came out and said that that she was very manipulated during his marriage, and that apparently these women have formed a kind of a support group. But it's always, the sketchiest part of it was that one of the main characters of the story is a young woman who was, I believe, 13 or 14 when they started interacting online. They never had any personal encounters. They never met in person, but there are apparently pretty lengthy texts and claims of Skype messages that were sexual in nature.
So it reminds me of what we were talking about not very long ago, and probably within this same month since the last Signals and Noise, though, about R. Kelly and the fact that he had been singing and people had been talking about the things he had been doing with underage women for years, mm-hmm. and yet, because of popularity, though, I think is where it ended up for a lot of people, that these people were not challenged in their positions of power because they had enough power.
Right. And, last month, I think, was the big R. Kelly documentary came out. And so people were finally starting to scrutinize him to a deeper level. It's been sort of my theory that, during this whole Me Too movement, we've seen very little discussion of musical artists. It's been primarily film, television, other media formats. But I think there's been this sort of perception of, it's always sex, drugs, and rock and roll. They're all the bad boys. We know that there's all kinds of kind of documentary evidence of very poor behavior among rock stars. But we've sort of just not been talking about it. And I think that might finally be starting to change with the R. Kelly documentary and now this New York Times story, that this is kind of the first contemporary sort of more mainstream rock artist to get called out in this kind of way.
Did you get a sense, Chris, that it's often executives and now we're finally beginning to get into the realm of the artists themselves? Although it has happened, obviously, with some actors. Kevin Spacey comes to mind.
Sure, yeah. I really think of how as sort of cultures of work and production, these are areas where a lot of the kind of creative work and lifestyle goes on out of sight. There are few significant HR departments in film is one thing, and this is the area I think about the most, of course, but media is even less structured and kind of less supervised. And so in some ways, I think that's part of what's going on here. There's this sort of widespread area of activity that just goes on and it's part of people's lives and things happen out of sight.
Well, I think when you, Andrew, said sex, drugs, rock and roll, I was thinking, yeah, it's not like the Rolling Stones ever had an HR department in the old days.
Right, and that's actually what I was thinking about is that, there's a, a documentary, I think Precious and I mentioned it on a previous episode, about the Rolling Stones that played the Ashland Independent Film Festival last year that I can't say the name on the air, that, it has all kinds of behavior of the Stones that it was just appalling. And if that happened in any other work environment, you'd be like, that's not just sexual harassment. That goes quite a bit further. I just had I teach a foundations production class for students who are just sort of wanting to get their taste of what the film industry is like. And one of the things Chris and I have been working on in our digital cinema program here at SOU is how do we tackle these issues within media industries as a professional issue, not simply like, oh, these are interesting topics to think about, but we are sending the next generation of professionals into the media industry. And so I just did a session yesterday about this stuff, about, what does it mean to have consent? And, in film, we think about it, it's not just the casting couch. There's all kinds of situations where a director might be in a position of power over an actor where touching may or may not be appropriate. And you don't, for instance, I was talking about, if the hair of an actor has fallen in front of their eyes, you might be like, oh, I'm just going to move that out of their face. But saying, go the extra step. Don't touch someone without their permission. Say, is it all right if I move your hair? When you're on set, a lot of these working environments, they're intense, they're long,
they get into relationships physically that would not have existed.
Exactly.
Otherwise.
And so they're very emotional situations. But I kind of tell them, you're going to have friendships, you're going to have romances with the people you're working with. That's going to happen. But still, you need to treat this as a professional environment. When you're working with one another in a creative way, don't use that opportunity as the moment to bring up your interest in someone. At some point, you're going to be hanging out in a more appropriate social environment, but keep it out of this workplace. Just go that extra step to treat everything as a professional environment.
There's also the challenge in both teaching that and I think in working in that environment is there's a degree of romanticization right around that and within film, certainly on the film set and the long hours and the ferment of the creative process. And I think it's just exaggerated in music, I would imagine.
Smaller spaces with fewer people.
The romantic, the romanticization of the groupie, right? Which there've been movies made about that. We just saw Star Is Born, which is not quite that story, but it has some bearing on it. And
almost famous.
And of course, the presence of drugs and so forth.
But that's a great point you bring up because I remember having this discussion with a coworker a few years ago about I think I was talking about the ABC show Castle, where the partners working side by side, man and a woman, and of course they end up engaged in love, and my work partner said, of course, because it's what always happens. This is the way that the popular media portray people working together in close conditions. They often end up romantically linked.
Yeah, well, the work family is a staple, right, of our television and film culture. So to some extent, you absolutely see, as those stories are built, they need places to go with those narratives, so you put people together.
We are having our monthly segment, Signals and Noise, with Andrew Gay and Chris Lucas from the Communication Faculty at Southern Oregon University, and invite you to join the conversation and drop a new topic on the table or join the ones we're talking about. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. I think you were the one in an email who referred to this as pretty much ancient history, Andrew Gay. But I mean, this is what happens in trying to cover the media world now, is that we have not yet had a chance to talk about the confrontations at the March for Life in Washington between the Catholic school students from Covington, Kentucky, and the Native American drummer, and off camera for a lot of people, the Black Hebrew Israelites, who apparently had a lot to do with ginning up the confrontation there.
Yeah.
I mean, but apparently camera angles make a lot of difference, and also time, not just distance, but time.
Yeah, the January news of yore. yeah, I mean, that was a fascinating story, I think. And it's a story that I still feel like no one really got right. There's a lot of a rush to sort of sensationalize this viral video. And then I think there is, to some degree, an overcorrection of the media freaking out when they realize there's more video. And then there's putting the kids on television on the morning shows. And I'm thinking, this is one way or another, you're just destroying this kid's life. I think whether or not it's positive or negative, giving this kind of spotlight to this person, you know, why are we even doing this? Why, as a society, are we shining this much attention to this particular character and this story? So I thought I was kind of confounded by the whole process.
Yeah, it was disappointing to see the speed with which a certain set of images and stories then become tools, right, of other organizations and movements. And it's a real challenge and something. It's a tricky topic to bring into a classroom, but I felt like I had to bring that issue in because I feel like in some ways it was a failure of media literacy on the part of many people, which is to recognize that, the first images you see of a situation are often going to be, clearly not the complete story and often misleading. And so it's sort of incumbent on all of us in an age when the media is moving so fast to be ready to step back a second, especially when something is really energizing, And I saw that picture and I was immediately like, oh, that looks like
it. With the smirking kid.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was a teenage boy. I know that what attitude looks like. and I didn't know, I certainly felt like I was reading that there myself. And of course, we still don't quite know how to read the entirety of the incident, and just shows how difficult it is to really get to the complete story.
Well, yeah. And here again, it's sort of like the snapshot issue. This was video, but then the individual frames of that show just that confrontation of mm-hmm. Native American man and high school kid with MAGA hat and doesn't really say anything about what led up to that situation, how they came to be in that proximity.
Right.
What was going on?
Right, the sort of the lust to tell the story is what sort of is so maddening because you also had the situation of the Native American man being stories coming out. He has a record. He didn't serve in Vietnam. He was in service at the same time, but didn't actually wasn't deployed, and he never claimed he was deployed. Just this sort of sense on both sides of like, oh, how do we make this an agenda? How do we add a new gotcha moment in this entire story?
And one thing I also like to talk about in media classes actually is clothes as media, clothes as communication. And that hat in particular, of course, there's an enormous sort of weighty history and set of ideas that are coming along with that. And I have no idea why that boy's wearing that hat. Maybe I actually would assume it has something to do with just the kind of group cohesion, and a lot of them are wearing it, and it was kind of a thing to do. And he probably has some political alliances or.
Well, he was there for March for Life, I think.
Right. Yeah. So there were. So it does mean something, but I think part of why people are triggered into that response is because of the meanings built into that.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I think I'm sure Precious would have a lot to say about it. Mm-hmm. She teaches a class on fashion as communication, mm-hmm. right? And I think I've seen a lot of people express, especially people of color, say that in their view, the MAGA hat has become essentially the white hood. And so it's become this very powerful symbol for some people, probably on both sides, right? That on one side that it's expressing some kind of pride in what the current president is doing, and in another sense, people feeling very much that it is a symbol of hate.
All right. I want to respond to a message here from one of our callers who didn't stay on the line. They were a little annoyed and upset about the way that we were giggling a little bit when we were talking about sexual assault. I want to assure people we were not giggling about sexual assault itself, but some of the circumstances in which people do some absolutely ridiculous things in trying to defend themselves from charges of sexual assault, I think, is where the giggles came from. I do apologize on behalf of all of us on this panel for getting into that situation, because I was aware of it at the moment and was thinking, oh, wait, this might be read in a different way from what we're feeling at the moment. And I appreciate that you heard something and that was not what we intended to communicate, though.
Absolutely.
Let me take a call here from Ann and Eugene. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Chris Lucas and Andrew Gay and this month's edition of Signals and Noise.
Yes, I think you're missing one of the big stories of the week, and that's the Southern Baptist expose about at least 800 cases of sexual assault, and that this is just the tip of the iceberg of the amount of corruption in religion and how little that is covered except for one of these bomb blast stories that we hear once in a while. And that the fact that you picked on people in the music industry rather than bringing up this corruption in religious establishments just goes along with that. Thank you.
Thank you, and appreciate that. Well, I mean, she's got a point. We focused generally on individuals like Ryan Adams or anybody, the other people in the entertainment business, R. Kelly, for example, versus larger examples of this that go on in a systemic manner.
Sure. Well, I agree that's an important story, although I think our particular segment is focused on stories about the media, not stories that are in the media specifically, but those stories that are engaged about media. So, and that's why I brought up the Ryan Adams. I think it's a very, very serious situation with the Southern Baptist, and I'm glad it's getting coverage.
Mm-hmm. I think, you know, one thing to note about that story about the Southern Baptist is that story doesn't really come to light without real work of investigative journalists, which was, as I understand, several newspapers working together in Texas to produce that story, which is the kind of work that is, you know, being done less and less because of the cost of it. So just to take a, I guess, media angle on the story, I think I was really glad to see that story come to light, not only because of, you know, revealing, you know, the kind of abuses of power that are happening in some of these institutions, but to actually, you know, gives me some hope that we are still seeing investigative journalism happening and in a way to bring this these injustices to light.
Well, and there are nonprofit newsrooms that are more on the rise. We were talking about the folks at the Oregon, the Underscore Media Collaborative, I think it's called. It'll be out, won't even start work until about the middle of this year, but that was one of our recent guests here on The Exchange, which brings up the issue then of layoffs recently at the likes of BuzzFeed, Gannett Newspapers, and Verizon's entities, which include AOL and HuffPo.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, I guess we've talked about layoffs a few times through the history of the show, but this is a pretty massive series of layoffs. It was kind of staggering to watch in my Twitter feed as reporters that I follow saying, "Oh, yep, I'm also available for work." yes, I got the news today and over several days watching all these reporters get laid off and actually seeing, I believe there was a tweet from the president sort of mocking the firing of these reporters. So, I think, you know, as Chris just made that point, right, that we are at a time where investigative journalism is more important than ever. We definitely want to see this kind of, you know, robust newsrooms, and it's alarming to see these situations.
In some ways, I'm reminded of going back a ways, the 1980s, the wave of deregulation, you know, in that era, and also the rise of cable television led to a bunch of consolidation and mergers and buyouts and so forth across the media industry that then led to the shrinking of payrolls. And I think we're entering one of those periods again, because I think in large part due to the rise of streaming media, then we have some pretty big mergers on the horizon, AT&T, Time Warner, Disney and Fox. And, you know, my understanding, you know, these particular outlets that we're seeing in the news, like HuffPo and BuzzFeed, They're actually part of these corporate structures now. So as these mergers happen and budgets are tightened, this is where this starts happening.
Got time enough to talk about one award show. You want to do Grammys or Oscars?
Let's do Oscars.
We're the film people.
Okay. So no host this year. We've talked about that in the past. But you guys were concerned too about some editing awards will be given out during the cinematography and editing won't be given out in front of the audience.
Yeah. So in the film world, this is quite the scandal. It's been a lot of outrage online, especially on Twitter. There's a decision some time back that a certain number of awards were going to not be aired live. They would happen during the commercial breaks, and they didn't know for sure which ones those were going to be, but they announced this week that they included editing, cinematography, hair and makeup, and live action short. Is that my right thought? And of course, a lot of outrage from major film directors and also star cinematographers and editors saying, what is cinema if not cinematography and editing? You know, they are the two aspects of cinema that certainly cannot be found in theater or other narrative art forms. And so there's a lot of outrage around that.
One of the ironies, of course, is that the current head president of the Academy, which runs the Oscars, is John Bailey, who is a cinematographer. and a storied cinematographer. And this actually, you know, it began last summer. They did a process. There's, you know, the Board of Governors, which is about 54 people from every branch of the Academy. They began talking about how to shorten the telecast and went through this process. And what John Bailey has said is that they asked the branches to volunteer to be moved into the commercials, and so some did. And I guess I'm not all surprised to see cinematographers sort of step up, because I've studied cinematographers as a scholar, so I know that they're quite dutiful and ready to do that. But they did not foresee this backlash.
Yeah. Well, you know, and I think this is the funny thing to me. This entire the past year has been a series of decisions by the Academy to try to make
the most popular film and not the most popular
right,
film.
Right, right. It's like, how do we make the Oscar cast shorter and more popular and more accessible to the public? And every decision has been met by huge blowback and embarrassment for the Academy.
Okay, about 45 seconds each for your pick threes to round out this month's Signals and Noise.
I'll let Chris go first.
Oh, my gosh. Well, let's see. So, okay, I got a couple. One is a local. I just want to this happens tonight, so everybody get on it. down at the Collaborative Theater Project in Medford, Vaudeville, Valentines and Vines. It's kind of a variety show format they're doing, which is a benefit for the theater. So that's about 6:30 at the Collaborative Theater Project tonight. I wanted to, on the Valentine's theme, wanted to pitch the Dear Sugar podcast, which I kind of enjoy. Mm. You know, Dear Sugar is the Cheryl Strayed's advice column.
Oh, sure.
She's turned that into a podcast now, which is very frank, but also really nice. And then finally, this is going out a ways, but on the 2nd of March, we're having there's a screening for of Coraline, which is a film that's quite sort of has some local connection at the Varsity. It's a benefit for the wildfire relief at
March 2nd.
Okay, March 2nd on Saturday,
okay.
Coraline.
Andrew, 45 seconds for your pick threes.
Well, you know, I really don't have – I have one, because all my time has been spent – I'm shopping for a car right now. So I could recommend car search sites, but that's probably not the media you want to talk about. So the only thing I'm excited about right now, and it's not really Valentine's theme, except if you think about, like, the love of family, is I've talked about it before. The TV series One Day at a Time on Netflix is back on for season 3. My good friend, Debbie Wolf, wrote the first episode, and so I'm proud of her and excited that it's back on the air.
We discovered the Irish half-hour series on Netflix, Can't Cope, Won't Cope, about millennials and alcoholism and issues like that. It's funny at times, but a little heartrending at others, so I'll throw that on the pile as well. Signals and Noise with Andrew Gay and Chris Lucas. Thank you once again for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange, and thank you folks for our patience as we figure out the issues here.
Thank you.